All right, welcome back. This is a very special episode, and I mean that in the actual use of the word special. I know that word special gets thrown around CT a lot, but sometimes people are mean in the other phrasing of the word. But so what we wanted to do is kick off the first series segment of the Berimit podcast, which we're going to dive into the Berichain ecosystem with some of the best and the brightest who are building in that ecosystem, maybe some investors, strategists as well. We're also going to cover a lot of explainers, onboarding stuff. So if that's your kind of jam and you've been covering the ecosystem and trying to kind of figure out what the hell's going on, make sure you hit and subscribe, and we're going to bring you a whole host of content on the video side. If you're following the website, there's going to be a shit ton of information that comes out from us on the Berichain ecosystem. And who better to start us and kick us off than the man himself, Smokey. How are you doing, sir?
GM, man. I'm all good over here. It's a pleasure to be here. Long awaited and finally in motion.
Yeah, long overdue. I kind of got way too excited a year ago, and I was just pestering you to come on, but the time is right now.
You got it, man. I wanted to make sure that we, we turned on the fire hose of attention, I suppose, at the right time. And now really is showtime. You know, the ecosystem's coming to life. We're starting to see, you know, more and more projects getting off the ground. And I think that even over the next few days, you'll probably see some very exciting guys start announcing some very cool things. I was getting, lunch, Chipotle, of course, today with one of the other guys who's going to be building on our ecosystem through the Build-A-Bear incubator a little bit earlier today. I'm really excited about those guys. Just a whole bunch of stuff moving in the right direction and dealing with lots of champagne problems as we scale the team, the network, everything in between. So excited to kick off Berimit because I think it's going to be a really fun initiative over the next little while. And I hope that we're able to capture the hearts and souls of many, as you guys have done before.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of those what feels super, super aligned for me kind of personally, because, and I think there's a lot of, I wouldn't say similarities on products, because you guys are building like this behemoth ecosystem and we're more a media research platform. But what the one thing that does kind of overlap strongly for me is you can kind of trick people into thinking you're just pissing around, and then as soon as people look into it, they're like, oh shit, this is actually legit. So, and I really like the idea of just not taking yourself too seriously, and it kind of has this added kind of like smack to the face when they realize like the underlying delivery of the product is actually like on par with or like exceeds what's out there. So that's kind of for me why what you guys are doing is so kind of important, because I think there's so much like prim and proper, like very, very suitish behavior that happens in the industry. And I've always just kind of enjoyed the fact that people can not take themselves too seriously, but deliver as well.
Yeah, you got it, man. And like, I think that's a lot of how we do think about it. I think that it's very possible to have a very, you know, tight run operation while having fun on the outside. And I think that people who take themselves too seriously are probably not the folks who tend to do exceptionally well in like on-chain crypto environments. Like most of the folks I know who are in the space have an air of silliness, right? And I think that lends itself quite well to the demographic that we're addressing for the most part, and also lends itself well to, you know, effectively venturing through uncharted territory and trying weird shit and seeing what sticks, right? So I have a lot of appreciation for the folks who can do a good job of what they do, but, you know, not have a stick up their ass while they do it.
Absolutely. So I want to get straight into it, because I know there's an awful lot to pack here, but for people that I want to kind of just bring people up to speed a little bit, and then I want to pick the bones off what you guys are up to and everything that's going on. So can you just kind of give us like a high level pitch for someone who's coming in cold to kind of Berichain and what kind of high level becomes all about? And then we'll dive a little bit deeper.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, when we think about it from the top down, Berichain is an EVM compatible L1. It's built on top of the Cosmos SDK, but it's very EVM facing. And it's powered by something that we call proof of liquidity consensus, or, you know, proof of liquidity as a civil resistance mechanism, as a variant or slight alternative to, you know, what's more commonly known as proof of stake chains. And the way that proof of liquidity works is it effectively allows users to turn their liquidity into a form of security at the chain level and use that to power the applications that are building on top of the chain. So if you're thinking about Berichain in an absolute nutshell, that's really what it aims to do. It allows you know, users to make their liquidity a productive source of security, and it allows that security to become, you know, I'd say, you know, more activated and more actually utilized in the ecosystem by helping direct it towards the applications that are building on top of the chain itself. When we think about the ecosystem itself, it definitely tends towards DeFi and or financial applications. And as a very liquidity-centric ecosystem, you know, which we really do believe to be the lifeblood of most on-chain interactions and a lot of, like, you know, on-chain crypto as a whole, if you will, it's definitely, you know, T-shaped in that direction. But at the same time, there's a pretty robust NFT ecosystem, you know, given that Bearchain sort of evolved out of an NFT project long, long ago. And there'll also be stuff happening in the GameFi space, the RWA space, the social layer, and a little bit of stuff in between. So, you know, we definitely want to be, I think, a home for people who are building the newest and most interesting things across a number of verticals. But we also are cognizant of the fact that there's certain areas where we have the greatest edge, and that does tend to be within the applications that, you know, exchange liquidity for some, you know, form of value, whether that be fees, emissions, anything in between.
Okay. Yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense. And one thing that I want to get into a little bit later, but I'll touch upon now, is like bespoke applications and the idea that I've been over to many a chain, some chains I really shouldn't be venturing over to, but I just can't help myself at times. I just like to have a look. I like to have a play around. But
of course,
what I see 99% of the time is you've got your standard kind of Univ2 fork over there. You might have a money market and another like two or three carbon copy applications over there. But from what I've kind of seen from you guys, a lot of the people who had preliminary conversations with, there seems to be this kind of, people have really opened up what they think is possible, and they've kept hold of this kind of bespoke design or this bespoke product, and they're waiting for you guys to kind of go to market so they can actually launch over that. Is there like a strong focus to have something a little bit different, a little bit new?
Yeah, that's exactly it, man. It's that, you know, we've seen so many different ecosystems come and go, as you've seen with like the same sort of bullshit standard forks. And I think there's, you know, a time and a place for forks, and that was probably a while back. And I think that, you know, what we really wanted to encourage on Bearchain is for folks who are building, you know, the next generation of interesting things. Like I don't see the role for something we've seen 10 times before in the ecosystem. I see a much more, you know, realistic role for something that actually means to push the bar a little bit, right? So where my interest lies and where I think a lot of the ecosystem is aligned is around trying to find as many things that can uniquely be built, you know, within the proof of liquidity ecosystem. Or, you know, if they can't necessarily be, if they could be built in another environment, figuring out how they can uniquely benefit from basically being part of the Bearchain ecosystem and being integrated into other stuff, whether that be, you know, proof of liquidity directly or other applications building on top of the chain. So yeah, I really do think that, like, you know, an ecosystem is, and a chain is really defined by the applications that are building on top of it. And I think that, you know, that's what's caused a number of, you know, great chains to live or die in some manner. I think we saw a ton of activity on Base with Frentech before that kind of like petered off for a while. I think we saw a ton of activity with DeFi Kingdoms on Harmony before they kind of blew up with like the Lock Jewel thing. I think our, you know, GMX has actually been a very meaningful and sustainable source of attention for Arbitrum, right? So I think that being able to have like 3 to 5 like super dApps that just help drive users in the door and actually, you know, deliver value to the chain while getting support in some manner, I think that goes a really long way.
Yeah, like as you said, GMX kind of was the Arbitrum token before the Arbitrum token at one point.
You got it. It became a proxy of some sort, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think about this? This is, wasn't actually anticipating to ask this, but I seen Tolly, co-founder from Solana, recently say something along the lines of, if done correctly, some of the applications on the network should actually be more valuable than the network itself. And I know this is like a little bit different because I think Solana has a little bit of a fee problem that they're trying to figure out at the minute. But you got any thoughts on that?
I think that's totally viable. Like, I think that there's a world in which, you know, I think there's a world in which the leading DEX or the leading like money market or perps or whatever the core application is on top of a given chain could totally be more valuable than the chain itself, right? Especially in a situation where it is not entirely reliant on the chain's architecture and could really be anywhere, right? So yeah, like I actually generally subscribe to that thesis. And it's also kind of interesting because Barrachain sits somewhere between, like, it's not quite a general purpose blockchain. It's definitely not an app chain either. But I think of it as somewhere in between. It's like a general purpose plus kind of thing, or app chain plus, depending on how you want to describe it. Because there is a full EVM environment where you have, the ability to deploy any Solidity smart contract that you would on any other chain that's EVM compatible. But at the same time, there's also like these basic DeFi primitives that are like cooked into the chain itself as a means of bootstrapping that initial security. So they have like the DEX, perps, lending market for the stablecoin built into the chain. And there's a world in which that one's like kind of weird in between, because it's like, okay, is that the chain or is that the apps built on top of it? But there's totally a world in which those are more valuable, or like, you know what I mean? Like the fee generation from that is more valuable than, for example, the gas being burnt by the system. And I think there's a number of these sites like cryptofees.org or whatever it is, where you can actually see like what's making more money on a daily basis. Is it theoretically Uniswap or is it like Ethereum, right? So I think that there's a lot to be learned from those sorts of operations.
Yeah, 100%. And with proof of liquidity, where did this kind of or originate from? Like, was it a developer misalignment issue that you guys seen? Was it way too many beers one night? Like, where is this whole like novel idea for consensus came from?
I think it came from, I kind of mentioned earlier that the origin story of Barrachain involves an NFT project, which, was basically just myself and Papa being like, hey, bear smoking weed are kind of funny. NFTs are kind of interesting right now. Let's see what we could do with this. And raffling off slash selling off a bunch of these NFTs in, DeFi native communities that we were spending a lot of time in. So think like, Ohm, Frax, Alchemix, those types of groups. And as we, basically let these, this NFT project evolve over time and, rebase into additional collections and expand and bring in more folks, a number of which had a very like strong DeFi slant to them, we ended up talking to folks more and more about like some of the problems they're facing and some of the interesting things that could be built within the space. Our backgrounds have always been either builders or effectively investors. I've been doing that, our entire careers really. And I think that like helping cool stuff exist is very native to what we just try to do. And I think that along the way, one of the problems that we found pretty interesting as we met people who were like more interested in sort of the security side of crypto versus like just the on-chain casino side, was that a very common trade-off was, okay, I have X amount of capital. I effectively have to choose towards allocating that to security or allocating that to liquidity in the on-chain environment. And that trade-off seems kind of, nonsensical, right? There's so many ghost chains that we've seen since 2021 onwards that will have hundreds of millions of dollars sitting completely inactive and like underutilized in their validator set, but at the same time, we'll have, 2 million of TVL on the chain, right? And that seemed, like the wrong allocation of capital. Like, sure, the chain is secure, but at what cost? Like, no one's fucking using it. So our goal was to really see something that would allow us to, align incentives between liquidity and security at the protocol level, and that's how this idea of proof of liquidity came to be. Which is to say that the only way to generate network security and or the staking token of the network is by first providing liquidity or providing that, good or doing that work to the ecosystem, which we thought made a lot of sense just from an incentive alignment point of view. Because I think that if we believe in a thesis where, if you look at a practical blockchain trilemma, it isn't necessarily just built around decentralization, scalability, and security. It's actually more likely built around developers, users, and access to capital. We think proof of liquidity helps, solve all of those different problems, or check the boxes that attract all of those different parties.
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. And another aspect of this, what people might not be completely familiar with if they've just used Ethereum or L1s, L2s, and stuff like that, is the kind of tri-token model that you guys have got going on. So, can you give us a high level on that? And as I say, we can kind of break it down into each component.
Yeah, for sure. So the tri-token model is actually, it's probably closer to like a 2+1 token model, in that, honey is a little bit more removed from the equation, but I'll start from the top. So first we got BGT, or Barra Governance Token. BGT is a governance slash staking token of the network. It's entirely illiquid. It is a soul-bound token. So you cannot go and buy it on Binance, Coinbase, whatever it is. You have to actually do the work of providing liquidity in order to earn that token. Now, the way that you earn it at first is by any of those, native, those primitive applications that are built into the chain itself upon launch. So think the DEX, the perps, the lending market. But over time, any different smart contract that's deployed on the chain can actually be approved via governance to become an eligible source of yield for B2T emissions, such that users can LP in that, you know, can provide liquidity to that contract and actually earn B2T rewards in the same way as you might, you know, any other app, an options vault, an NFT AMM, a SocialFi platform, whatever it is. And that's where, you know, I think the system starts getting very interesting. So, you know, beyond being the staking token, the founder's stake, BGT has, you know, effectively a couple of other purposes. On one hand, it's actually basically used to determine the overall rewards rates across the entire network or which pools get what amount of emissions. And this is due to a pretty unique set of validator protocol interactions. So each validator on Bearchain basically has its own gauge or its own like cutting board pie chart is probably the best way of imagining it. And that validator, whenever it wins a block, has to basically forward its rewards, you know, after commission, whatever, to different liquidity pools on the network in order to basically, you know, increase its consensus weight over time. So, you know, basically the validators are distributing their block rewards towards protocols building on the network and driving value towards protocols and users. And then the aggregate of that, of the full validator set's breakdown of, you know, their distribution of emissions is what determines the overall chain like rewards rates effectively. So you could think of it as like, you know, each group has its own, you know, curve gauge of sorts, and then it turns into a massive gauge at the end of the day that says, okay, it's going to be X percent on this pool in the DEX, Y percent on this perp vault, so on and so forth. And that's all determined via BGT because users choose to delegate their BGT with the validators. And therefore, if a validator has more BGT delegated towards it, it will have a greater weight in the distribution of those rewards effectively. So that's one of the things that BGT does. The other thing is that BGT actually earns a portion of the fees from the entire network. So for all the different services or all the different applications that are effectively being powered by BGT, they're being powered by the validator set and receiving emissions in the form of BGT, BGT stakers with validators, people who are delegating to validators, earn a portion of those fees paid out actually in the stablecoin honey. So, you know, if you're long on effectively the volume or the amount of activity flowing through the network and its fee generation, then it makes sense to actually hold BGT and accrue that over time. BGT holders can also earn bribes from protocols that choose to work directly with validators to basically, you know, bribe them with their own native token or other token in exchange for directing liquidity towards their pools. So you could be, you know, an options vault with your own platform and you could say, hey, I'm going to give you X amount of like, you know, bear options token. And in exchange, you're going to push Y amount of BGT emissions towards my smart contract or my pool in the DEX after having gotten approved by governance as an eligible destination. So that's a whole bunch of stuff that one can do with BGT. And then the final, you know, perhaps most important part of the equation is that it can be one-to-one exchanged or burned into Bera. So you cannot burn Bera into BGT, but you can take one BGT that you've earned by providing liquidity and burn it into Bera. And that's, you know, BGT in a very large nutshell, right? Illiquid, soulbound, but used for voting on rewards rates across the chain, earns fees from the network's operation, and is basically the emission slash rewards token of the network. Then there's Bera, which is the gas token of the network. It is the Bera and Bera chain. It'll obviously be able to be used across the chain in different liquidity pools, so on and so forth, staked in different applications, all that kind of stuff. But its primary role is to serve as a gas token and the liquid token, such that a user can basically choose between, you know, earning fees from the network and being able to influence their rewards rates, holding a liquid token and being exposed to that price action, totally up to that user themselves. And what I think also gets, you know, very interesting from a BGPT point of view is the ability to form this kind of funky flywheel where it's like, okay, you know, you are, you know, you're providing liquidity to a pool, you earn BGT, then you go and stake that BGT with a validator that's directing the majority of its emissions towards that pool. You know, that pool's liquidity becomes deeper. Ideally, it's generating more fees. You're getting paid out more and you're able to sort of start compounding that effect. And that's part of the flywheel that we hope to see, you know, protocols and users establishing on the chain. And then finally, there's a stablecoin of the network, Honey. Honey is super vanilla, super basic. You know, it's a core pair in the DEX, and the vast majority of you know, volatile tokens are paired against or maybe paired against it easily in some manner, such that it can basically serve as a little bit of like a router token and or a liquidity sink for the network. It's also used to collateralize the perp vault and stuff like that. But it starts as just, you know, a USDC wrapper. Goal is to be as compliant as possible there. Don't want to end up in any hairy, you know, legal positions around stablecoins or anything of the sort. But we, you know, think that at some point, subject to governance, it could get more interesting. We just, you know, that's not an us decision. That's more for where the network goes over time. But, you know, basically the plan is one honey will be, you know, approximated to one USDC and will be fully backslash collateralized by USDC. And yeah, man, that's a Tri-Token model.
Awesome. So with as we've seen with kind of Curve and Convex, obviously there was a huge power law that like played out there where Convex basically gobbled up the lion's share of all CRV, and now it's kind of perpetually in this motion where kind of convex rules the Curve ecosystem, and then you've got the additional layer on top of that. Like, do you think that's inherently a bad design, or do you think that's inherently just, again, just a basic power law distribution just playing out there? And I don't know, have you kind of thought about how that might play out in the Bearchain ecosystem?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to like some of the locking mechanics that play as well over there, which are you know, notably less present in the Bearchain ecosystem, right? So there's no advantage if you go, nor can you really go and lock your BGT for 4 years. You won't get any better rates or anything of the sort. And I think part of that is what made the Curve / Convex structure more appealing, where it's like, okay, cool. Like, you know, now I'm going to have this aggregator that allows me to have a little more control over these like extendo positions. And I think that, you know, I think there's a very meaningful role for Convex in the ecosystem if done correctly. And we already know a couple of great teams that are working on that, you know, some of which are going to be coming out of like, you know, Medium Stealth more in the near future. But I don't think that it's a, I don't think it's necessarily a good or an evil. I think it's just sort of a market phenomenon, right? I think that there's a world in which, I think right now, I don't think Convex is necessarily unhealthy for the ecosystem, but I also think Curve would be quite fine without it. I do think that in some ways it probably expedites certain processes, and reveals to some extent, you know, something that isn't nice to always think about in the industry, which is like a lot of decentralized, you know, entities and a lot of decentralized actors are a lot more centralized than they might appear off the top. Right. And, you know, I think it's not hard to tell that there are a few parties that have a massive degree of control over Convex or Convex voting, and as such as well over, you know, Curve ecosystem and emissions as a whole there. So it's one of those ones where it's like, I don't feel strongly either way about it, but I can see both sides of the healthy / non-healthy argument.
Yeah. So, let's say I'm a builder and I've kind of launched a token over on Bearchain, maybe using the native DEX.
Mm-hmm.
What am I looking for to help bolster liquidity for, say, like, right, I'm going to say this, and like, if anyone's listening, please just disregard, this is all hypothetical. Let's say there's like a block token, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to bolster liquidity for my block token, and this is a kind of hypothetical situation where a lot of people are going to come into. What do I want to see? What do I want to kind of be pushing towards? How do I kind of increase the liquidity around my token? And how do I get the most out of the Bearchain ecosystem?
Yeah, for sure. I think that the first thing to start by doing would effectively be, you know, going within the graph, you know, talking to some of the projects in the ecosystem and figuring out, okay, cool, like, is there a way that the block token can get integrated into this lending market? Is there a way that the block token could be useful collateral over time for this application, right? Is there a way that one could build, you know, more exotic structured products around the block token? So really, like, how stuck in can one get, and what can one do with this token? Does it serve a meaningful role? Then, like, you know, figuring out, do people want to trade this token, and or is there, you know, some degree of native demand or volume on it, right? And I think that's easy to see out the gates relatively quickly with a little bit of like co-marketing type stuff. And then I think the next question would basically be, okay, can you link up with some of the community good, the public goods validators / you know, groups in the validator set, and we'll have like a matchmaking service of sorts, where one can say, hey, I'm building this. This is why I think it's interesting. You know, we're looking for folks who can help, you know, support our liquidity over time and basically just, you know, push more of their block rewards towards us. And then, you know, as the block token deployer, whatever it is, you could either choose to try to bribe a validator, or you could simply see about, you know, perhaps, you know, I'd say almost like indicating to one of those validators or other people on the network that they should LP in this pool, you know, work towards earning emissions with it, and then get it approved via governance such that other validators can actually direct their emissions towards it. That would be like the order of operations as I see it, which is to say, sort of one, get stuck into the community and see what kind of stuff the token can do. Two, outline value prop to validators and basically engage in the matchmaking process. Three, submit governance votes such that, you know, that pool, like, let's say, you know, Block Bera, Block Honey, whatever it is, can become eligible for tokens in the native, for emissions in the native DEX. And then four, you know, work with some of those validators probably from step two to direct emissions towards your pool, probably by either bribing them with some of the native token, like as in your own, or just seeing if they want to LP it themselves and then double down on juicing their own LPs effectively.
Awesome. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Someone needs to create a Tinder UI for this matchmaking service. For
I could see it, man.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone's like up to it already. Some of the funky stuff I'm seeing come out of the ecosystem is quite like just so refreshing. What I wanted to kind of touch upon is you're in quite a unique and challenging, and I mean challenging in the best sense of the word. How do you encourage effective collaboration, but also understanding that application competition is really good for the ecosystem, because there's going to be so many people going to market. And you know, sometimes I feel like a lot of ecosystems can be quite gate kept, like try getting a token on Aave as collateral. There's a lot of mechanics that go on behind that, obviously, but a lot of ecosystems, I won't name any names, it gets political really quickly. So how do you kind of foster this as much of a democratic kind of open arena for competition, but also healthy collaboration there as well?
Yeah, it's tricky, man. I think a lot of it is, you know, trying to curate the early community as much as possible, and just making sure that the scene itself is, is healthy, right? Like, I think that it's very easy to get a toxic gatekeeping community, and every now and then that pops up, like even within our community, and I do my best to work with folks within there to sort of like, you know, just to quash some of those sorts of things. And I don't think it's my job to play mall cop, but I think it is my job to make sure that, you know, we don't end up being represented by folks who just have ideals that are very different from what we're actually trying to build at the end of the day and what the majority of the ecosystem is working towards. So I guess when I think about that off the top, I don't think that one can really pick winners, but I think the one, and our job more than anything else, is actually to just be a white glove / a concierge service for the best teams. And the way that we, you know, very much think about that internally is, you know, if someone says we're going to go and launch something, you know, we're going to go launch a liquid staking token, a lending market, a conch, a LickDex, whatever it is, you know, an NFT marketplace. It's our job to help every team as much as possible. Now, if there's an opportunity and there's a toss-up and it's like, hey, which of these two teams should we put forward to it? I think in 9 out of 10 times, it is in our best interest and or the best interest of the ecosystem to put forward the stronger team. But I think that as I see it, that really just gives a, you know, an underdog in that situation more incentive to outperform, right? Like I really do think that, and I think that most Alta-1s or Alta ecosystems can sustain like 10 to 20 strong projects at most that actually end up like getting a lot of use, even if you look at like ARP or BSC or like Optimism or like anything of the sort. And I wanna make sure that we have an incredibly strong batch of those curated very early. So in short, I want to encourage competition, but at the baseline, we want to give, you know, every team as much help / as much resources as we possibly can, without ending up in a situation that has egg on our faces. Because, you know, we can't go and make introductions for 50 different sets of teams to VCs, because honestly, there will probably be maybe 5 of them that are, you know, ready for that, right? But we can very much tell the other ones, hey guys, like, listen, we don't think that you're quite at the right stage right now, but we're more than happy to support you with, you know, mentorship, more than happy to, you know, set up office hours, we're more than happy to help you guys work through some of these things as you get ready to sort of like level up there. And I think some people will get butthurt about that and take it in a very like offensive manner and, you know, just be like, fuck Parachain, man, like blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. It's natural, I think. I think other people will be like, okay, cool. Like maybe these guys have our best interests at heart in some manner and are also trying to be cognizant of how the ecosystem is built and seen, because I think you've seen this from the other side of the table. A lot of things come down to signal to noise ratio, right? And you never want to be someone who's just shilling nonsense nonstop. You want to be someone who's helping to, you know, get people in front of cool stuff and being very selective about what you do. So yeah, I think that competition, you know, is one of the most healthy things possible. And I've actually stated before that I would love to see applications effectively displace some of the chain native primitives. Like, I think that a world in which someone builds like a way more cracked DEX or a way more cracked perps vault, and it is being built in a manner where it's still being powered by the chain, still passing fees back to users, but is better than the first applications that were built there, is awesome. Like, I think that's very net positive. So I would rather just push people to build things that are better than support the usual crap.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know there's been quite a focus to, as I say, when I've been off on my DeFi adventures and stumbled upon kind of very kind of native and naive chains where you're getting over there and there's not much there. I know there's been like a strong focus to have stuff there kind of from the get-go. Was this kind of by design, or was this purely a byproduct of a lot of developer excitement? Or is there a little bit of both there? And what will be the kind of day one that you can kind of count on?
Yeah. And sorry, when you say this, what do you mean? Do you mean like the ecosystem? Do you mean like our attitude towards it, or what part?
Yeah. So like, say you guys go live day one, I'm over there. What are you kind of expecting to be there? Because I know there's been an awful lot of chat. People want to be there day one, you know? And I know
there's obviously
the ecosystem, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, when we think about the majority of, you know, I guess basic primitives and spicy shit that you tend to see on new chains, I think we'll see all that stuff day one. So, you know, when you think about stuff like your DEX, your perps, your LEND, that'll be there. There'll be a pretty interesting money market there, to my knowledge. There should be liquid staking tokens / you know, protocols of that sort. There should be yield aggregators. There should be NFT marketplaces. And then what I'm even more excited to see, you know, beyond, of course, some of the stuff coming out of Build-A-Bear, et cetera, will just be some of the more exotic stuff, you know, like funky NFT plays, stuff that allows for, you know, new types of liquidity mechanisms, you know, AI yield farmers, like all the sorts of weird shit that we haven't seen as much, that can be really effective if done right. I'd like to give a front seat as much as we can in the Bear Chain ecosystem. And also to find as many combinations of projects as possible that allow you to, you know, yield something that's greater than the sum of the parts. So, you know, in short, you know, I think that I'll probably have a much clearer idea as we, you know, kick off some of our testnet initiatives and see how quickly some of these groups respond, but also thinking about tools that can improve like user experience overall. So like, you know, some of the teams that I'm close with that are, you know, I'm either an angel or advisor to as well, will probably be deploying. So, you know, guys like Thunder Terminal that can help with an on-chain trading experience. Teams like DreamOS, they'll do like some really good stuff, I think, in terms of how easy it is to access the, you know, the site, like the applications themselves that are being built on the chain. Groups like Waymont that are doing really cool stuff on the custody side and smart action side. I think we're trying to work with as many folks who are trying to, you know, push the envelope of what is really possible on chain.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's going to be so refreshing. As I say, it's I just love the, as you said, the spicy shit that gets over there. And I know there's some of the protocols that we're speaking to and probably will have on the podcast quite soon that's going to be over there. And it's really exciting because they are new products. And I think that's really important for stickiness as well. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on this. It's like, I'm just going over to another kind of heavily forked ecosystem where there's absolutely nothing brand new. I know there was like ecosystems previously where they were really like, there was a request for builders and we were like saying, well, why don't you speak to these guys? Cause it's something new. It's something novel. It's not anywhere else. And they're like, we're just going to do another Geist fork.
Yeah, exactly.
Have something so bespoke that people actually can only use it if they're over there. You know what I mean?
No, I completely agree. I truly don't understand it. And I don't understand, like, having talked to a lot of like, you know, heads of ecosystem or builders at some of these other ecosystems on their internal teams, the vast majority of them have left me kind of confused as to how their ecosystems are being built. I think there's a couple groups I know that are doing it right. I'd give a shout out to Jack and the guys at Polygon, like ZK DeFi. I think there's few killers in the space. I think that he's definitely one of them. So I have a lot of respect for him. And he's also been an OG friend of the Bears for a long time. But I, as I look at the landscape, I see fewer and fewer teams that are actively trying to get people to build cool, new, interesting shit, and would rather just be like, yep, here's my uni fork. I'm gonna slap some funky branding on it, pump it, right? Like, and I can't understand where the fun is in that. And I can't understand what one is hoping to gain out of it. So, you know, I think I'm sure and I'm positive there'll be like random shitty forks on Bear Chain. But I will be very surprised if they take the spotlight there.
So I want to switch to marketing now, or reverse anti-marketing, which has been like soup. Like, I nerd out about this kind of stuff, and obviously kind of have to like look at content distribution and how you kind of edge your way in against, like, we want to be going up against like the Amazaris and the Delphi over the next 12 to 18 months. And it's just like, well, how do you position yourself in a way that's not kind of ramming it down people's throats, but also making you people aware of it and having that kind of air of speculation? And I think speculation drives this whole industry. But how much of the marketing has been conscious? How much is it being reactive? How much is it being, you know, just purely organic?
Dude, like, I can confidently say, fuck, I don't know what I just dropped, that I don't think we've ever like really planned a marketing campaign, like, to date, right? Like, the most concerted marketing effort that we have had was when I worked with one of our community members and one of our marketing team members to put together a our announcement video, which was half, like, you know, a little bit of like me talking at Token 2049. A little bit of like, you know, walkthrough of some of our partners and some of the stuff on the testnet, like, you know, just like sort of its UI, and then schizo anime, like, you know, video reel, like quick shots, just showing some of the cool stuff that's come out of there. And we were like thrilled by the reception. Like, I don't think I've ever, at least people told me that they haven't ever seen like such a, like a large and or successful testnet launch. And I don't know. But I also think that I may have just missed a few testnet launches attention-wise. So I'm hoping that we can continue doing things around the marketing part. I think a lot of it comes down to being able to have, like, you know, built that early community, you know, deep in the bear / mostly in the trenches, who actually end up serving as an external marketing wing without us having to do more per se, right? Or without us having to force people to bend to a narrative. You know, to date, I think that our only marketing spend has been like a couple of bar tabs at events in like Denver and Paris and stuff. But we haven't, you know, there's no paid ads. There's no, you know, bear on the side of a site somewhere. It's just, it's organic farm to table autism.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I think a lot of other ecosystems and networks would look at that and be like, fuck me, can I buy this off a shelf? I'd spend a shit ton of money on that. And you can't do it without, as you say, having that kind of organic, genuinely interested community that does a lot of that organic kind of viral passive marketing for you, I think. And it's really, really difficult to, and you can't fork that kind of shit, and you can't pay for that kind of shit, I don't think. And if you kind of see people who try to pay for that shit, and it just comes off as like a fucking shill machine, doesn't it? So it's like,
you got
kudos for actually being able to foster that. People should be taking note. I think it should be like a test case and a case study.
I appreciate it, man. And yeah, like, I think it's one of the things that I've appreciated a lot, and I saw firsthand in the past, was sort of how the Chainlink community formed. And it's interesting because I think they had a similar vibe at some point, right? They had perhaps a little bit more of a cult of like Sergey. Which I think is fine. It's a way to build something as long as it lasts, which I think they've done a wonderful job of doing, right? Like, less sustainable in the case of Luna, more sustainable there. And they very much had like a bunch of like, you know, giga autists from 4chan to start, but also a bunch of folks who were very sharp and very thoughtful about, you know, the future of Oracle technology, then cross-chain transfers, everything in between, right? And what I've said this before on podcast, but what I found like to be very interesting was when you try to look in and be like, you know, if you ask the general public who's the community lead, you know, people know about Rory and stuff, and people know about like Keenan, but like they'll throw like 7 or 8 names at you because they were just folks in the community who became their own, like, you know, their own nodes of influence. And I do think this idea of like a community having a social validator set of sorts is like kind of funky, right? Like, there's a very real edge that one can have by having enough people that are just diehard, no fucks given, like fully in what you're doing. And there's no doubt times where I think that price tends to influence sentiment quite a bit, and there's been interesting proxy action in terms of, you know, how people think about Barrachain and perhaps their overall perspective on it from, you know, our favorite little JPEGs of bear smoking weed. But I think even in the depths of the bull, like the absolute bear market when NFTs were giga dead, people just didn't give a fuck. They were just, they're shitposting in Discord. So I think that that's been somewhat beautiful to see. And I truly do hope that regardless of where things end up financially at Mainnet, that sort of, you know, that energy maintains itself.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, you can't buy that. So it's something to be completely cherished, I think, and a lot of other ecosystems would die for it. What have you guys? I know the answer to this, but I'm just asking as a bit of a throughout question that representation. Yeah. Globally, I know you've had a large presence across Asia. I mean, we met up in Singapore, a couple of drinks, mm-hmm. had extremely bad head the next day. But
yeah,
how important is that to be completely like a global ecosystem? Because I know, in my perspective, people try to like silo away, and if they're doing well in one specific region, like lean into that. And obviously, that's all well and good, but this is supposed to be like a global infrastructure player here. Like, reason behind that? Like, how's the educational process going in far corners of the world?
For sure. I think I want to go actually as wide as possible on that, man. I think that you're quite right. There's a lot of groups that will often either choose to very much focus on the East or the West, right? They'll be like, yep, I'm going to go like double down aggressively on Korea. And then I think the Korean ecosystem got a little bit tired of it. And they're like, fuck these burger coins, man. Like, we're done with burger coins. Which I thought was really funny. And you'll have like, you know, teams even with founders like sort of pretending they live in Korea and stuff in order to get the buy-in of the population. Like, listen, I respect the bit / respect the conviction. It's just, you know, it only goes so far. So I think that's one angle. I think that for us, I think that there's a lot of teams that don't actually think about their international ground game until they go live or until much later. And listen, we haven't paid as much attention to it as I would like, but we're actively scaling up efforts on that side. So, you know, we brought on, you know, one of the folks who's been around in the Asia ecosystem for a while, who was previously, you know, working at Origin and Aave doing BD for them to help lead up some of our on the ground efforts over there. We brought a number of angels on board from the, you know, Chinese, Singapore, Korean ecosystems to make sure that we had, you know, I think some folks helping to spread the good word, you know, in the right circles. And now we did the same with India not too long ago. We brought on Sino Global's old head of India, our man Vish. He's been absolutely wonderful, and uses his experience as like a past VC plus a builder to help, you know, see both sides of the spectrum and build those, you know, on ground connections. We're thinking about some cool stuff that we can do in Africa with some of our friends at Jumbo. We're thinking about stuff that we can do in South America, probably more so like advocate / ambassador communities and or banking systems there. So in short, I think it'll require a fair bit of team and personnel expansion to do justice to it over time. But I think that we're trending in the right direction. And I think from what I'm hearing, at least in extended networks, there's more and more chatter about us in those communities. And I've also seen a score of articles in all sets of languages, like some poorly translated Thai, some in Korean, some in Japanese, starting to spread, you know, the word about what we're doing. And we've hired mods across, you know, vast majority of these geographies as well, who've been incredibly helpful. So, in short, we want to make sure that we don't neglect the international community. I think we certainly have an edge, and we are best able to serve some of the builders and folks from the Western world to start, just, you know, language barrier, ease of working together wise. We want to make sure that we can, you know, deliver that same experience across the globe very soon.
100%. It's one of the most fun parts of the world as well. So I think it aligns quite well. And if there are any Berachain meetups in Asia, I'm happy to go to them.
Yeah.
So tell me, how's the response to Testnet been? I know from the outside looking in, it looks incredible. What are you guys seeing? What do you want to see more of? Just fill me in.
Yeah, man. Response has been really positive. I think the biggest thing on our end has just been figuring out how we can scale to accommodate demand. I don't think that we've seen a testnet grow this quickly in history, honestly. And we know there's a healthy or perhaps unhealthy amount of bots in there. But we've also seen like a meaningful, like within easily the hundreds of thousands number of users that look entirely real from everything that can be discerned from on-chain data. And also interactions in Discord, so on and so forth. Like there's 30,000 plus people who've been manually given cub roles in the Discord, given their participation, et cetera. And a lot of people are like, oh, are you guys Discord grinding? It's like, no, actually, I'd rather like open the funnel really wide and then try to like have the mods and people who we trust like manually roll people who we think will be pretty cool to be part of the community over time. And if they end up being bots, that's cool. They'll get nuked eventually. So like, like in short, reception has been really positive, man. I've had a whole bunch of great inbound. I've figured out a bunch of things that, you know, could go wrong and are actively going wrong on the tech stack side. And, you know, learning a bunch for what we can do better at mainnet. You know, so far I think it's been mostly champagne problems. I've been figuring out how we can work best with our validator set, you know, best rule, you know, sort of rules and regulations around comms and how soon we can expect them to upgrade binaries. You know, the stuff that we can do on a marketing push with lots of partners, how we get all of our co-marketing initiatives off the ground once we add a little bit of structure to that. And then very soon, you know, more contests and sort of, I'd say, initiatives amongst the ecosystem to get the applications really fired up. But I think so far, like, you know, we haven't been trying to, you know, have a call to action for people to deploy as of yet. We'd like to give things a little bit more time first and then start opening the floodgates. But, you know, I think there's already like 20 plus applications that we know of, like slash, like, you know, pedigree teams per se, that have deployed their dApps and are actively finding ways to work together and build on top of each other. So, overall have been, you know, very happy with how things have gone and, you know, just slowly inching in the right direction.
Sick. That's great. What, how difficult is it to toe the line between wanting actual users to go and try stuff out in the midst of this fever pitch of incentives and points programs, and then also the downstream effects of what come with that?
Of course, of course. And honestly, we've been trying to, like, you know, I'm pretty anti-points, and I want to find a way to get us as far away from that kind of thing as possible. Like, yes, quests have XP and stuff, and I guess that can totally be seen as a form of points, but I don't think it's the same sort of points farming that we've seen in other cases. At least, like, you know, that's just my opinion there, to be clear. You know, I think it's sometimes difficult to distinguish signal from noise, but we've done our very best to make sure that, you know, people are answered as much as possible. Now, of course, it's tricky when there's thousands of, like, real people asking questions and there's, like, 10 mods and, like, you know, some 20 plus, you know, 30 plus team members, of which maybe 10 are, like, keeping an eye on Discord at any given point in time beyond the Discord mod team. So I'm certain, and I apologize for the times where things slip through the cracks. But we've been doing our best to, you know, I think, address real issues, to make sure that, you know, developers have their expectations effectively set and are either, you know, having their concerns and questions answered right away, or being quickly directed towards documentation and then building better guides and better processes internally, such that when people have the same questions during mainnet, we're able to make things, you know, much snappier. So I think a lot of, like, I see a lot of this as an exercise in process building. So, like, you know, figuring out where we didn't have our shit together enough right now, and then how we can iterate on that internally such that it becomes, like, you know, just super brain dead down the road.
Yeah, a good kind of community moderator is such an unsung hero. Like, I see at all levels, from basic fucking shit coins all the way up to, like, complete ecosystems. Those guys are worth their weight in gold. Really are.
Yeah, big facts, man. We are incredibly blessed with our community moderator, and, you know, he's a saint.
He needed to put up with some people, Jesus, in this guy. Right, I think we're getting close to the top of the hour. Is there anything I might have missed off on the questions that you want to kind of fill people in on, or is there anywhere you want people to be directed to, or what they should be kind of aware of on the horizon?
Good question, man. I think the people are probably best served in a couple different ways. One, just keeping an eye on stuff that's happening on Twitter. Myself, Bearchain account are probably, you know, good resources in many cases. Dev will probably push out more technical content, office hours, that kind of stuff down the road. I think that, you know, it's very worth keeping an eye on stuff that's going to pop out of the ecosystem soon, because I think there's going to be a lot of exciting things there. And I think that people who have an idea or are considering building something should totally try to get in touch. I try to answer, you know, if I see that there's a DM that's pertinent to a builder, I do my very best to answer it. If I see that there's a, you know, DM asking me about, like, a grant, I probably don't answer it. And if I see there's a DM that's like, please give me money, I also don't really answer that. So, you know, we are definitely, like, builders first. And I also do try to answer users' questions whenever possible, whenever there are resources that are not more easily found, you know, just online and documents and such. So, yeah, I'd just say, you know, our goal is really to, I'd say, start the snowball of the ecosystem very soon. It's already been, you know, starting to roll, and then it's sometimes a little bit out of control. But I would like that concerted effort to begin in the very near future. So when that happens, I think it would just be exciting for everyone to be engaged, to be popping into Discord, hopping into the voice chats and stuff, and just getting involved. Like, I think showing up is really 99% of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone listening to this, as I say, I'll recap if you might have missed the beginning. We're gonna be covering an awful lot of bear chain ecosystem stuff on this section of the kind of podcast, YouTube, whatever you want to call it. So this will be the bear myth section. So there's going to be all the onboarding tutorials and things that you need to get over to the ecosystem and try it out. We'll slowly start rolling that out. You're going to see founder interviews, investor interviews, builder interviews over here. So if you do like that stuff and you want to kind of be up to date on it, just hit the little subscribe button or the follow button on Spotify. And yeah, Smokey, thanks so much. I appreciate you're extremely busy, so thanks for jumping on. And I hope to see you soon in person, and we can have a little bit of a party. And yeah, just let us know if you need anything from us, and yeah, consider it done.
Looking forward to it, man. Likewise, thanks for having me here. And then looking forward to just seeing more and more cool builders and coverage in the bear chain ecosystem here soon. I think it's going to be a pretty fun initiative.
Absolutely. Right. Take it easy. See you later, everyone. I'll see you next time.
Peace out.